This is Ross Johnston, and you're listening to Accelerate Alaska, where we explore the competitive advantages, the systems, and the industries that move Alaska's future forward. This episode is sponsored by...
This is Mike Ferris, President of Alaska Enterprise Solutions, the Xerox sales agency with offices in Anchorage and Fairbanks. Businesses who need a reliable supplier of quality office equipment turn to Alaska Enterprise Solutions. We provide multifunctional copiers, wide format printers, postage systems, and can handle all your scanning needs. And we provide professional support to keep things running smoothly. Let us show you how to reduce print costs with a free assessment. Alaska Enterprise Solutions in Midtown Anchorage, or visit AESAlaska.com.
We take it for granted that a strong economy needs a great education system. But with the rising cost of colleges, a lot of us are left questioning, is it worth it? No one thinks about this more and about how to prepare students not for jobs of the past, but for jobs of the future than Dr. Jim Johnson, president of University of Alaska. We join him on stage during the education track.
I appreciate that very much. Yeah, the way my mom dealt with my issues when I was 9 years old, I was living in Fort Bragg. My dad was jumping out of helicopters every day and getting wet and getting shot at and all that stuff, is she fed me news magazines. That was how she managed my curiosity. And so I could just never give up. And so actually I have a habit. I think, Bill, I've shared this with every noon on Saturday. I work Saturday mornings, along with, you know, certainly during the week. I cook a big pot of popcorn. My dad had this great method for cooking popcorn. I get a beer. He liked Pilsner Urquell, this Czech beer. Tom is here, right? He's Czech. In any case, and I read the Weekly Economist magazine. And I just continue this practice, and I call it a grounding ritual. It's something that is not negotiable around my house. I really appreciate Dina's presentation. It was fantastic, and I really love how she began with why. And that's really important for us at the university, too. Why? Why do we exist at the University of Alaska? Why should Representative Kopp and his colleagues in the legislature give us $327 million for this year? That's a really important question for him and for all of us to think about. And it's about service. It's about serving the needs of Alaska through research, through education, and through outreach to the public. And I really love, too, Dina's talking about success. What is success? What is it to produce somebody who then goes out into the world and succeeds? And some of you may have heard this story. I was down at Berkeley giving a talk in January of this year about university leading through tough times. And I stayed an extra day to meet with the president of the Blockchain Club at Berkeley. So we talked about blockchain and how he's created this club, and there are 600 applicants at Berkeley for 60 spots on their blockchain club, and all the training they get. It's not university training. It is all student-led, student-done. It's really impressive. And so we learned about all this and how they go out and create these consulting teams, and they go out in the Silicon Valley and advise NGOs, companies, et cetera, on how to use blockchain technology for whatever it is they do. And it's not just cryptocurrency. There are many, many other use cases for blockchain. So after the conversation, one of the fellows at the table asked the student, so what year are you in? Well, I'm a senior. So what kind of job are you looking for when you graduate? And the student sort of looked at the guy and screwed up his face a little bit. And the guy thought, well, he didn't understand or he didn't hear my question. So he repeated it. You're a senior. You're graduating. You're going to need a job. What kind of job are you getting? He said, I'm not looking for a job. I'm going to create an industry. That was really powerful and really said something to me that, yeah, we need to educate people for jobs, but we also need to educate people to create an economy, something outside of the institution that's creative, that's innovative, that's going to pull people through our educational system. So, you know, we have a choice. Dina deals with this all the time. Many of you in education, and even if you're in private sector, you're educating, you're learning all the time, and you're teaching other people. Quite a lot. I met a little girl at an opening of our new combined heat and power plant up in Fairbanks yesterday. She's 4, and our grandparents were faculty, and they introduced me to her, and I said, I get to go to school every day too. So that was kind of fun. But we deal with this choice. And are we going to educate people for the past, or are we going to educate people for the future? So it's Educating for the past has an upside, which is that we know it, right? The downside, of course, is it's over, it's done. The upside of educating people for the future is the opportunity to create. And the problem is we don't know what it's going to be. Just as Dina said, what's going to be relevant about what we teach? What is relevant about Antigone? What is relevant about partial differential equations? Don't know. So how do we deal with this dilemma? As I was thinking about this presentation, I thought, okay, how do we do it now? Well, in the P-12 system, our kids are in school 180 days a year. So that's half the year if I divide 180 into 365, right? At the university, it's 150 days a year. Now, I guess it used to be that we had agriculture and we needed to let our kids out of school to go out there and help with the harvest. So our school calendars are of the past, aren't they? Even though we like to think creatively and innovatively, that's educating people for the past. Teachers, what's the state of that now? So they're underpaid. We don't respect them. We blame them for the ills of their kids' educational careers. In Alaska, we made some improvement this year. Only 67% of the new teachers hired in Alaska were imported from outside of the state. It was 70% last year. So we're making some progress, but wow. And then in rural Alaska, what happens? We have a 50% turnover rate. Seat time. That's how we measure our success. Yeah, we have grades, and yeah, we have that sort of thing, but credit is a function of sitting in a chair. Hours, credit hours. We pass kids on. Even kids who aren't at reading level, at grade reading level in third grade, are still moving on. My friend Michael Johnson tells me very few of them will ever graduate from high school, much less go on to post-secondary education. But we pass them on. And at the university, we have Byzantine processes. It's one of my hypotheses, and if anybody has evidence to disprove me, I would love to have that brought forward because hypotheses need to be disproved. Our enrollment started declining in 2012, and my hypothesis is the reason is these cell phones and these Zillows we talked about and Lyfts and Ubers and Car Gurus and Amazon.com and Alaska Airlines, superb customer-facing systems and interactions. And our expectations for interacting with organizations are very, very high now. And if you present a Byzantine process to somebody, about how many of you are going to wait 2 days for a password that then you can go into a different system? I don't think so, right? Or even as something as simple as, what is UAA? What are the courses that it offers? Oh, well, what about UAF? Oh, pull all the way out. Go all the way over to that website and go through that one. Oh, and what about UAS? Well, nobody's going to do that, right? Again, if anybody has evidence to disprove me, I'd love to hear it. But that's my hypothesis for why enrollments are going down, particularly in non-degree seeking, because those are the folks who are going to be most sensitive. They're not going to put up with our Byzantine processes. So a reasonable question is, so what the hell are you doing about it, University of Alaska and Jim Johnson? You're the guy who the regents brought in, Regent Bishop, to try to help out. And a concept, I was on a call yesterday with the presidents of other state university systems in the West, and we're all working on this education attainment challenge because all the Western states are actually the worst in the country in terms of educational attainment. So Hawaii was on the line, Montana, Washington, Oregon, California. And I was describing our situation a little bit here in Alaska, and I threw out this concept of the courage of desperation. And I think it really applies a lot, and it's what gets me up in the morning, because some of the numbers I'm about to share with you would call for that. But I want to share, too, when we're in these leadership positions, and this is a sensitive issue, it's timely as well, the first thing that came onto my desk when I walked into the job was not the budget. I knew that was a nightmare. It wasn't attainment. It wasn't your graduation rates. It wasn't all those things. It was, hey, your university for the last 3 years has not been following federal guidelines for handling sexual misconduct. What are you going to do about that? Couldn't tell you about it when you were applying for the job. What are you going to do about that? No, God's honest truth. First meeting of the day. The chair of the Board of Regents walked in with the general counsel and knocked on the door, and I thought, they're here to welcome me. You know, first. Right. We attacked that. We really went after that challenge. Because fundamentally, you know, Maslow's pyramid, you got to take care of safety. I mean, you can't not be taking care of safety. So certainly attack that. The cuts to our budget have been pretty severe. Even including this year, from 2014 to this year, 2019, in our fiscal world, the cumulative cut is $195 million. That's a lot of money. That's 1,200 fewer faculty and staff in our university system, from Ketchikan up to Kotzebue. So a pretty big hit. We needed to move on some things. We needed to make some decisions fairly quickly. And we are a change-averse culture. Along with the Catholic Church, we've been around longer than pretty much any other set of institutions or industry. So we're very change-averse. So I thought, hey, let's create a process where we really look at our organization and try to figure out how we can serve the state's needs for higher education better with less money. Do we really need 3 schools of education? Do we really need 3 schools of management? Do we really need 3 procurement offices and 3 procurement processes and 3 grants and contracts processes and on and on and on and on? Do we really need 3 universities that are stepping on each other's feet and competing with each other and fighting for resources with each other? My answer was, well, this is what we do in education. I created 22 teams, put faculty, staff, students on each team, community people as well, gave each one a charge. So there are 230 people who are involved in this process. And I didn't ask for recommendations because I knew what would happen if I put people on a team and asked them for recommendations. I would get a bowl of oatmeal. Now, oatmeal's good, but that's what I'd get, right? I wouldn't get a piece of salmon or an option for a piece of salmon or a piece of cod or something. I wouldn't get options that way. So I just asked for options. And I got over 100 options, some of which we implemented right away, some of which we are in the process of implementing now. So those organizational issues were high on our list. We also, at that time, because we needed to cut, well, actually, we cut a little deeper. Because at the same time, we had to invest in some things. If all we're going to do is hand out budget cuts to people, they could hire a monkey to do that, right? Here's the budget, here's your share, 5% less, here, go figure it out. So this took the courage of desperation, the regents especially, because they supported us doing that. We cut deeper for 3 years in a row in order to invest in priorities, invest in ANSEP, to invest in our K-12 outreach program that actually mentors first-year teachers and is shown to bring turnover down and student performance up. We invested in the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, this superb applied research program up in Fairbanks. We invested in a new engineering building. The legislature wasn't able to complete the funding for a new building. That building needed $35 million to finish up. It had been sitting there empty for a couple of years, and I said, that's just ridiculous. Well, Jim, don't do that, because then you'll let them off the hook. They're the ones who are supposed to pay for these things. I said, no, we're going to bond, and we're going to pay it off. So we cut deeper to pay those bonds. And today in that building, we've got an increase in engineering majors, but we have 10 faculty-owned businesses operating in that building today. Another top priority for us moving forward. We set goals. So after we sort of did all this organizational stuff, worked with the regents, set goals for 2025. 5 goal areas. Other no-brainers: economic development, research, workforce development, educational attainment. And why is educational attainment so important? In Alaska, well, let's talk about the nation. If we had 100 average ninth graders in this room, in the United States, 83 would graduate from high school. In Alaska, it's 76, at least the most current numbers I've got. In America, 53 would go on to college. In Alaska, it's 33. In America, 24 will graduate on time. And in Alaska, it's 9. So that's 50th in the country, folks, 50. And educational attainment is highly, highly correlated with income. For those stats nerds in the room, that correlation is 0.8. So 80% of the variance in income is a function of educational attainment. And that R squared, as we call it, is just going up. And here we are with the lowest education in the country. How do we expect to have a new economy, a diversified economy in Alaska? There's an outfit that surveys the states, 25 criteria, and it's about the New Economy Index. And strangely enough, here's another hypothesis that I'd like your feedback on. Alaska ranked 13th in 1998, 13th among the 50 states in the New Economy Index. Today, 2017, we ranked 42nd. That's a whopper of a decline. Now, my sense there is, it's the same hypothesis as before, we didn't change. We kept our systems as they were. We kept our economy just like it was. Everybody else took off. And we're stuck. So change aversion is a real serious challenge here. So we have this 2025 plan. It's a lot about partnerships with Commissioner Johnson, who will be speaking here quickly, with the Anchorage School District, Mat-Su School District, and the other 52 school districts across the state. I've named a couple, so I think it's 54, right, total. So real strong partnerships there, partnerships with industry, because we can't do this ourselves. Another big strategy is growing our own so that we have Alaskans teaching in our schools. Our goal by 2025 is to have 90%. You might say, as some people have said to me, you're nuts. No way you're going to get 90%. But I did learn a little bit of math when I was in school, and I know that that's a ratio. And ratios have numerators and denominators, right, Dina? And if we can increase the numerator through our teacher education programs and decrease the denominator by decreasing churn and turnover rates, we can hit that ratio. So we're going after that. We're going after processes. Again, it's not super sexy stuff, but we cut deeper in order to invest in streamlining processes, automating processes, and we'll keep pushing on that. One of them is a gateway. Thank you. And that gateway is so that people can look all across our university system and they're not stuck in our silos. So a critical priority. In any case, we're seeing some success, and I'll wrap up here now. We did get some additional money from the legislature, so that was a real positive. We discounted tuition in our community colleges this year. Our UAS sent me an email yesterday, UA Southeast, saying that enrollments in our CTE occupational endorsements went up 40% year over year. So that's a real positive. Applications are up. Donor numbers are up. And in the long term, our real goal here, again, the core of it all is education attainment. And if we can do that, incomes will go up. Hopefully, our number one in the country, unemployment, will go down. Our number one health costs in the country will go down. And economic development will move up. I don't know what the economy is going to look like in 2025. We're pretty good at that. But 2040, 2050, very tough thing to do. A lot of uncertainty out there. So our job is to try to create the people who will figure that out and create it. That's the job. And so that's what we're all about. And I hope we're all in, and I hope you're all in too. Thank you, Dina.
All right.
I hope you enjoyed what you heard. If you want to see the presentation with slides and visuals, go to accelerateak.com. Thank you to Dr. Dina Bishop and Kathy Moffitt for organizing Education Track. And a huge thank you to ACS for sponsoring it. Without ACS, Accelerate Alaska would not have been nearly as successful. ACS is a trusted partner for businesses and is helping to deliver a future all Alaskans can participate in. Do you enjoy this podcast? If so, go to accelerateak.com to find out how you can contribute, volunteer, or even bring an Accelerate conference to your town. accelerateak.com. This has been an Accelerate LLC production. The future is already here if you know where to look.